All right, good afternoon, and welcome to the Cigar Box Guitar Builder podcast. Flying solo today. Poor old Darren's got a bout of the, let's just say he's got a nasty flu. There you go, bit of intro music. I just wanted to say a big thank you to our sponsor for today, CB Giddy, where you can go and buy all of your awesome, super-duper guitar and Cigar Box guitar parts. Buy your parts from cbgiddy.com. And... yes, also, don't forget Australian and New Zealand customers, you can get a good break on shipping costs from the US, from CB Giddy, if you order at the moment. You can actually support this podcast by using the affiliate link down at the bottom in the description. If you need to buy parts... for your own builds, and you can do so using the affiliate link and the promo code Birdwood. Now, the promo code will only work if you use the affiliate link, and you will get 10% off the total price of your order. This show will also get a little kickback as well. CB Giddy are not only sponsoring this podcast, but they also sponsor the YouTube channel as well. So please go over, just look in your browser, YouTube browser, and type in the Cigar Box Guitar Builder podcast, and there will be my dopey-looking head looking up at you saying, hey, I've got some things to show you. I'll take you through some builds and tips and tricks and all that sort of stuff, and that brings us on to today's show. I don't have an interview. We had actually an interview lined up with the builder, and unfortunately, due to unforeseen circumstances, he is not able to be with us today, but we will reschedule and book him in for an interview a little bit later. And again, hoping that Darren is feeling a lot better. So it's just me and Prince today, basically, and what I thought I would do is firstly talk about the group. Actually, everything will have to do with the group today, because what I'm doing is actually a Q&A session today based upon some of the questions that have been asked in the group. So whether you are a beginner or an intermediate builder, I hope... some of the answers that I give today can be of assistance to you. These are my opinions. They are just my opinions. If you disagree, please put a comment in. Let me know if there's anything you disagree with. But everything is basically just as I know it from my years of building cigar box guitars and electric guitars. All right, here we go. Let's have a look at the first question. So the very first question actually comes from David A. Henning on the group, and he says, I have an intonation question for you guys. I set my bridge fully extended just at the scale length, so every string can be at scale length or longer. When turned, everything else is sharp. Or when tuned, I think it means everything else is sharp, never flat. And I can't get the intonation right. Am I placing the bridge wrong? It's a little... Okay, so not necessarily, but it depends on what kind of bridge you are using. If you're using one of the intonatable bridges, the hardtail bridges that you can get, setting it... okay, this is how I do it, because, yes, you can get... you can sometimes get caught out. Simply... measuring the length exactly with the ruler doesn't always work. And the reason it doesn't always work has a lot to do with your string height. If you have a high, let's say medium to high string height, what's going to happen is as you press your finger down onto the fretboard, ostensibly what you're doing is stretching the string. It's kind of similar to what you would do if you were fretting a note and bending the note on the string. So depending on how high your strings are off the fretboard and off the fret, if they're very high, you're going to stretch the string before you can actually fret the note. Now, that will definitely send it sharp, especially at the 12th fret. So my suggestion would be, if you want to play a guitar that has higher action, I personally like a medium action. I don't like a super low action on a cigar box guitar, or even on a six-string electric. When I play, I generally like a guitar that's got a bit of meat. I like kind of fighting for my notes a little bit. So when I set my bridge and set the intonation on my guitars, what I'll usually do is generally to compensate for that 12th fret. So when you're playing your guitar, and funnily enough, the only guitar I've got down here at the moment with its strings on it in the workshop is actually a fretless guitar. But let's say we've got an open string here. You can hear that harmonic over the 12th fret. All right, so the idea would be that when you press the string down, you can hear that sharp. Now, this is a fretless guitar too, sorry. But you can hear that sharp. The reason it's sharp is because the action on this guitar is actually quite high. So as I've pulled the string down, it's starting to stretch the string. Therefore, you need to compensate. My suggestion would be to compensate for the downforce of your finger onto the string. And basically what you want to do is, if it's going sharp, you want to pull the bridge back. So if you're going to use the screwdriver, what you want to do is turn it clockwise, so righty-tighty. You want to go righty-tighty with your screwdriver. And what that'll do is that'll pull the bridge saddle backwards to the rear of the guitar. Now, that'll lengthen the string length. So what'll happen then is, as you press that string down onto the fretboard or onto the fret, it should, now depending on how high your strings are, if they're ridiculously high, no, you're going to have a lot of problems. But if they're at a sensible height and you just need to compensate for that, it should actually play in tune. And it should actually play in tune all the way up the neck and above the 12th fret as well. If you've got a traditional bridge, most of these guitars is tuned to like GDG or EBE. As a rule, what I usually do is I do the same thing. I set my, I tune my guitar to, let's say, E, or that might be EBE. All right. And again, what I'll do is play the open string, play the harmonic, and then press down. That's a little sharp. So what I can do is pull my bridge backwards, whether it's a bolt or whether it's a piece of shaped timber or whatever you're using. That's basically it. If you were fretting it and it was fretting flat, it's not reaching that note. It's almost like you'd have to bend the string at the 11th to get up, or you have to bend the string at the 12th, sorry, to actually get up to pitch. What you need to do then is shorten the string length and you push the bridge towards the neck. I hope that makes sense. But that's basically, as a rule, what you do. So getting back to the crux of the question, where you said, I set my bridge fully extended just at the scale length, make sure you've got a little, with the screws, make sure you've got a little bit of play either way. Okay, so when you tighten that saddle, don't just leave it right at the end, because if for some reason you need to shorten the distance, raise the pitch, you've got nowhere to go. You'd have to take the bridge off, reposition the bridge, and then you'll end up with holes in the top of the guitar. That's if it's a hardtail, screw-on hardtail bridge. Yes, I think that's... Yeah, so just make sure you got a little bit of leeway each way. What I usually do is find... Because I expect I'm going to need to... because most of the guitars that I do, when I do put the bridge on, they fret slightly sharp at the 12th fret. So I always make sure I've got a little bit of leeway to pull those hardtail bridges back. Another thing that can become a problem, if you've set your bridge too far forward, the further you tighten and pull the bridge saddle back towards the back of the bridge, you're going to find that the screw itself, that grub screw, that moves the saddle forwards and backwards, if you've had to pull that back too far, what you might find is that if you're using the string through the back, not through the beneath the guitar, at the back of the bridge, if you're putting the strings through that way, which is the way most of us do it, I must admit, you may find that the screw interferes with the string path. So be careful with that. I hope that helps. So Keith Glassock had a question. And Keith's question was, what type of wood do you use for the neck? He says, I'm going to try building my first CBG, and I don't know whether to try and make money to make my first neck or to buy a pre-made one. Keith, don't buy a pre-made one. Dive in. Throw yourself in. This is my suggestion. Throw yourself in head first. Using a pre-made one is fantastic. They're great if it's a kit. And funnily enough, I find kits more interesting in a way for people who have a lot of experience actually building necks, because of the fun factor of it. They are very simple to make, and if you don't have a lot of tools at your disposal, getting a kit from CB Giddy, look, it is a fantastic idea. They are there. They're available. They're relatively inexpensive. They come with basically everything you need except for the tools. So, yeah, I mean, it's obviously a great option. But the caveat is that if you don't build your own neck, you're never going to know how to build your own neck. And there's something very... very enjoyable about finding... Look at this guitar. I mean, you can't see it. This guitar here that I've got was built using a piece of old timber from a pallet. It's a piece of pine from a pallet, which I just ripped off and cut it to length, I think at 40 mil. And basically just I built myself a cigar box guitar out of a little length of wood, and believe it or not, a cardboard box. And I've strung it up with a heavy E and a... And actually, these are just bits of tuners. They're tuners that I had from an old box from the old shop of old Japanese tuners. And the fact that I made this thing, I'm not selling this. This is just something I've got down here in the workshop if I just want to have a play on something. This is just for me. There's building your own guitar neck will do a few things. It'll really get you to understand scale length. If you're doing your first one, don't do frets. If you've never done frets before, just get the scale length right. Focus on a couple of things that maybe you want to get right first, such as getting your scale length, Drilling in holes for tuners, shaping the neck so that it's comfortable to hold in your hand. You can literally build a cigar box guitar with a couple of screwdrivers, sanding paper, a handsaw, a few files. Honestly, that's all you need to build a cigar box guitar. And then if you can find some, you need a couple of bolts, one bolt if you want for the bridge, one bolt for the nut. It really is a very simple process, you know. And I think we get very caught up. I think we get very, very caught up with the idea of building something that, oh, I want to sell. And that's coming from a seller's point of view. But I remember when I first was building, my first four guitars that I built them for me. And like this one here, I built for me. I build lots of guitars for me, just for the fun of it. And I think that's important. But yeah, man, I'd just find yourself, go down to Bunnings or go down to Lowe's or go down to whichever hardware store you prefer. Go and get yourself a piece of 42x19 or 42x20 timber that's about a meter in length, and mate, you can make yourself a guitar neck. And if you make it yourself, it's a wonderful experience. If you've never built a guitar before, don't build a fretted one maybe to start with. Just build a fretless one. Get to understand the instrument. And you got to remember, this is where cigar box guitars came from. You know, cigar box guitars didn't come originally with pickups. They didn't come originally with frets. They were built by, you know, people who just needed to make some music on an instrument. The easiest way to do it was to get some fence wire or some broom wire and a length of wood. And this is where rock and roll was born, man. It was all born on building your own guitar neck. You know, that's my idea. If you want to go and buy a pre-made neck, go and do one. Go and grab one, mate. But I would strongly suggest start where Muddy Waters started. You know, start where, you know, gee whiz. Robert Johnson started on a cigar box guitar. That's where people started. You can start there too, you know. And don't run before you can walk. Be prepared to make mistakes. Be prepared to totally screw something up. And the cool thing, remember, the cool thing about using scrap timber, it's free, you know. So if you can go and grab some old pallets from your local hardware store, or if you find an old pallet sitting on the street, you got a bit of glue some pieces together, cut it to shape. It's free. It costs you nothing. Bit of sweat, you know. I've noticed myself getting back to building old-fashioned, rustic style, especially fretless, man. I've been building so many fretted instruments, it's crazy, and I've totally reinvigorated my love of fretless guitars and fretless cigar box guitars. So my suggestion, go and build one, man. Go and build one. Next question. Lynn Braswell. Do any of y'all make your own nut and saddles? He says, a stinky job, but it's just another item you can say, I made that. And he's making his out of bone. Looks like some buffalo bone. Yes, it is a very stinky, stinky job, and not one that I particularly want to do. Yes, I build my own nuts. I tend to use hardwood. I like using rosewood for guitar nuts. Any kind of hardwood I can get my hands on. I do order bone. I order rough lengths of bone. There is a supplier that I have used for quite a while who sells rough cut bone, and I tend to use that as well. The thing to keep in mind with bone is anything that you're working with that creates dust, has the potential to really, really, really make you sick. And bone is no exception. Many woods that you're sanding and sanding to shape can give off very, very bad dust. Black wood, for example, things like that that are carcinogenic. You know, you might as well be, you know, smoking an asbestos cigarette sometimes. So do take care when you're shaping bone, when you're shaping anything. Even just, I've noticed that this last semester, because I'm a school teacher, this last beginning to the year of 2024, I have really noticed my health, my breathing health declining a lot. And I'm actually putting it down to, I was sick. I had COVID, about 6 weeks or so ago, which messed me up, but I was sick before that. I've had a couple of respiratory infections and things like that. And what it's come down to is that my, woodworking and sanding, safety precautions have not really been great. And, I think I've really felt that. So I've got myself a few good masks, and now if I'm doing any sanding at all, even though my workshop is quite open, I basically work underneath my house. My workshop is quite open, but even then, I'm really suffering with very bad asthma, to the point where actually in the last week of school, so I'm a school teacher, last week of school I actually collapsed in the staff room with a really, really, really bad asthma attack. And it wasn't fun, guys. So please take care if you are cutting your own guitar nuts or bridges or anything to do with anything that creates dust. That's my health tip for you. Moving on. Looking. Oh, okay. All right. Yeah, big question. Okay, Tracy Coles. Okay. So I'm a mandolin bouzouki player who has got into blues via CBGs. Obvious move as we're looking at 3 to 4 stringers. However, I'm not that knowledgeable on magnetic pickups. I've got a few single coils and humbuckers, and there seem to be a lot of talk about where you position these and what pots you use, etc. I've been placing single coils and humbuckers at the neck, and these seem to pick up the warmer tones of the neck. Yes, you're absolutely right. Does anyone do this, and who puts pickups at the bridge, and why? Okay. All right. Yeah, there's a lot to unpack in that. Okay. Humbuckers and single coils. Okay, so for those people who don't know much about guitar pickups, single coil pickups were basically the first kind of pickup that magnetic pickups that were made. There's varying different forms. There were horseshoe style pickups and all this sort of stuff that Rickenbacker were making and for their slide guitars and all that sort of stuff. But the basic single coil pickup, and you can include P90 pickups in this as well, which are basically just fatter single coils. They're basically just, there's, a coil of wire wrapped around, magnetic poles, and you end up with a negative wire and a positive wire. I'm not a pickup maker. I've only ever made one, which worked. But that's a small caveat. Single coil pickups produce something called 60-cycle hum. They basically work like an aerial, and they will pick up radio interference. They'll pick up your fridge. They'll pick up your microwave. They'll pick up all sorts of interesting sounds. And a lot of very successful guitar players don't really care about that. Jimi Hendrix played single coil pickups. Eric Clapton plays single coil pickups. I mean, Stevie Ray Vaughan plays single coil pickups. There's an amazing range of people who love single coil pickups, and so do I. There's nothing like playing, a Stratocaster in the neck position or the bridge position, and playing a fuzz especially a fuzz face, you know, with the Strat, there's nothing as amazing, right, tonally as that. It's just the most incredible sound. But a lot of people don't like the 60-cycle hum that you get with it. And I'm not talking about magnetic hum, as in not earthing the guitar. It's got nothing to do with that. It's just basically got to do with interference that's picked up by the pickup. Easy way to fix that is just when you're not playing, you turn your roll your guitar volume off. So humbuckers were designed basically to buck the hum. And it's two single-coil pickups basically put side by side. And it bucks the hum. It gets rid of the hum. So that's the difference basically between a humbucking pickup and a single coil pickup to start with. Where you put it on the guitar is going to have a dramatic effect on the sound. It absolutely will have a dramatic effect on the sound. Probably even more so with a single coil pickup, a nice quality single coil pickup. As opposed to humbuckers, that there's a particular bell-like chime that you get from a single coil pickup in the neck position. It's something that's really, really cool. You can get that very groovy kind of Jimi Hendrix, "Wind Cries Mary" kind of sound. You know, all of those lovely kind of overtones, there's rich harmonics in there. Putting a single coil in the bridge can be very twangy. If you've ever owned a Stratocaster with a single coil in the bridge position, they can be really mean on your ear, especially if you've got a Squire. You know, there's that real kind of piercing sound that you can get on a single coil. Personally, I prefer a Stratocaster with a humbucker in the bridge position. And a single coil in the neck. That's my favourite setup. I absolutely love that myself. Putting a pickup at the neck is going to create a warmer tone, and that's simply because as the string's oscillating, it's oscillating in a wider. It's a wider range, and it does create a lower tone. Whereas when you put a bridge pickup in, the strings are oscillating at a much smaller. It's hard to explain it. It basically just creates a higher pitched kind of a sound. It can be more aggressive. That's why you often find, guys who want to play heavy metal. You know, if they're playing really aggressive with aggressive distortion, you kind of want that real cutting sound with a humbucker. You'd put that in the bridge position. You've nailed the question there, Tracy, absolutely, as far as that's concerned. Now, the last part of your question says, does anyone do this and who puts pickups at the bridge and why? So I prefer putting pickups at the bridge. And the simple reason for it is I prefer... If you've got a volume and a tone control... Because I set most of my guitars up with a volume and a tone control. And if you set your guitar up with the pickup at the neck, you've already got a warm tone, and it's harder to get... You can't roll the tone control back or work with the tone control unless it's active to increase the treble or increase that sharper attack that you get from the bridge position. So I prefer putting humbuckers in the bridge position. And the reason for that is very simple. If I want a warm, woolly, or a warm, bluesy, or even jazzy tone, I can simply roll the tone control back. And it'll give me that. And if I want to play like something a bit more aggressive and a bit more, you know, with a bit more attack, I just roll that tone back up. And because basically what you're doing in that situation with the tone control is dropping treble to earth. Okay, you can't increase bass as such. All you're doing is dropping the treble tones, the signal, dropping that down to earth. And that's basically how tone control works if it's a passive tone control. You can get basses and effects pedals and things like that with active tone controls, where if you do turn up, you can kind of, you can actually raise treble, but it's, you won't really ever find that on a guitar, and you probably would never find it really on a cigar box guitar. I hope that answers that question. Although, having said that, when I build with single coil pickups, I actually prefer single coil pickups in the bridge, in the neck position. And again, it's because I prefer, single coil pickups have already got a thinner tone, and I just think they really benefit from being in the neck position. So it'll depend on the pickup that I'm using. So if that answers the question. Next question. I'm out of breath because it is smoky down here in the workshop, and my dog is driving me absolutely insane. He just keeps bringing his ball up. So I'm actually bending down, standing up. This is about the 25th time I've thrown his ball for him while I've been doing this interview with you. But that's okay. I don't get sick. I'll get it. Oh. I don't get a chance to spend much time with him otherwise. So, and I certainly won't as the weeks go forward. Now I'm back at work next week. So, general question from Martin Blanchard. Is there an objective difference between a CBG and a cigar box ukulele other than tuning? I have made a couple of oil tin ukes and I'm working my way up. Well, looking at the picture, his oil tin ukes look absolutely brilliant. Well, it's kind of like saying, what's the difference between a ukulele and a bass guitar? Or what's the difference between a guitar and a bass, or what's the difference between a guitar and a bouzouki? They're different instruments, but they're stringed instruments. So they share that. They're in that family of stringed instruments. They've got frets. You create different notes or chords by putting your finger down at the fret at a particular position. I've made 3-string ukuleles for a friend of mine. Ukuleles are generally much shorter in scale length, generally. There are ukuleles that, and I can't remember that, are they concert? I'm not a uke player, not really, so. Which have a standard 25-inch scale length. And you basically just tune those at the same. Oh, my God, Prince, you are insatiable. You basically tune those using the upper four, the D, G, B, E, I believe, of a standard guitar. Ukuleles are otherwise tuned as a rule to George Clooney Eats Apples, G, C, E, A. And which I think corresponds to the 5th fret of a standard guitar. If that helps. That's basically the rules. The other way to differentiate between, I suppose, a cigar box guitar, and don't forget, cigar box guitars are bastards. They're an amalgamation of different things. There are no rules in cigar box guitar building. You know, we say that, you know, apart from the basic laws of physics, which we need to adhere to for it to make sense and for it to work properly. Yeah, they're basically cigar box instruments. They're just bastards. You can turn 5-string banjos. You can have 4-string banjos. You can have, you know, 3-string ukuleles. I suppose the easiest way that I would differentiate between a ukulele and a cigar box guitar would be in the scale length that you're choosing to use and a type of strings maybe that you're choosing to use. Because ukuleles will generally use, unless they're electric ukuleles that use a magnetic pickup, but ukuleles will generally use nylon strings or gut strings, I suppose, as they used to be called. So I hope that helps. That's cool. Ukuleles, man, they're awesome. I'm actually, I don't actually play ukulele myself as such, but I am actually teaching a group of 6 and 7 year olds at the school I'm working at how to play, you know, and we're kind of learning together as we go. And, you know, it's amazing watching these little people with these tiny little fingers trying to create like D chords and G chords and all this sort of stuff. A G chord basically is the same shape as a D chord. So it's awesome. And Martin, very, very cool. Great looking guitars. This is a good question from Dave Coker. Dave Coker, C-O-K-E-R. Does anyone have any good resources available that show how to properly lay out the various fret positions by length without the use of a template? I finally have a very specific design in mind to do as a first build, but want to do it fully by hand, in other words, by the seat of his pants, while using only common hand tools from start to finish. The only items I wish to buy for this build are fretting materials, maybe, a pickup with jack and strings. I've scavenged the tuners from a cheap unused uke, and I'm pretty sure I have everything else that will be required. A hands-on, low-budget, low-tech build is what I have in mind. Okay, just be careful with your with the ukulele tuners. Just make sure that they're tall enough to get through the length of timber that you've got. Ukulele tuners are generally shorter in height. The posts are shorter in height than standard acoustic or electric guitar posts. Yes, there's a lot of ways, and Chris Doyle suggests actually using a fret calculator. Definitely just go to Stu Mac, type in STEWMAC on your Google device or your internet device. The calculator is brilliant because you can do it in imperial and in metric. You can tell it how many frets you're going to use. You can also tell it what type of instrument you want to use. So basically, if you're building a cigar box guitar, just say electric guitar. I think I'd just keep it on that. But what it will do is, it, especially if you're doing it in metric, it will give you measurements to the hundredth of a millimeter, which is utterly useless. I basically just use the first if it said 1.456, I'd just kind of keep it at 1.45. Look, nearly 1.5, I'd kind of go to 1.5. You're not going to get that. You don't have to be anal about that fret position. Some people jump up and down about it and they want to use like calipers and all this sort of stuff. You know what? And as soon as you go and saw it by hand, you're going to be off by tenths of a degree or whatever anyway. So just be careful with it, but none of my guitars are out of tune, and I do it that way, and they play beautifully, and they're always in tune up and down the neck, so I wouldn't worry about it too heavily. The other thing you can do, which is what Darren McDonald, my buddy who does the podcast with me here, the other thing that Darren does, was he simply got an old acoustic guitar and basically put a ruler on the fretboard and just measured the length of, he liked that fret positions on his acoustic or on his guitar, and just transferred it over. And again, I've got three of Darren's guitars all fretted and no issues with fretting whatsoever. They're beautiful intonation, no issues. So have fun with it first, you know, especially if you're saying rustic hand tools. People have been building cigar box guitars using nails or toothpicks. My son built a cigar box guitar using toothpicks, and he was guessing. Literally was guessing the fret distance. As a 7-year-old kid, he just went, "I'll just put my frets here." And I said, "Well, just make sure you start up here, and then you make it go smaller towards the as it goes down this way." And I've got to tell you, man, he just eyeballed it, and he got like 4 or 5 frets, like really spot on. So, yeah, my suggestion is just have fun with it. Don't take it too seriously, and don't worry about it being you know, to the hundredth of the millimeter, because your ears aren't going to tell the difference anyway, man. I got to say it. You know. Anyway, that's that's my suggestion. A couple of quick questions. Another one was from Smoked Guitar Works. He got a guitar neck delivered, which had actually had a snapped headstock, and the headstock was actually looks like it was just hanging off. It's actually easier in a way to fix a guitar headstock if it's snapped off completely, because then you can kind of really get in there and clean it up. But mate, glue and clamps. It's just get yourself a really good quality wood glue, an exterior wood glue. Get yourself some good clamps. Tape if you need to pull it up into position. But that would be my suggestion. It's like if you find a secondhand guitar or a guitar by the side of the road that's got a snapped headstock, pick it up, grab it, stick some glue in there, and you'll find you've got a guitar. Please, apart from the magic that people do when it comes to refinishing and doing that sort of stuff, gluing your headstock back on it, mate, it's not rocket science, okay? It's not. It's super easy. And this is the second last question for today. What's it say? Tool advice for thus tool, please, from Jason London. About to go buy a solder kit, so I don't need to borrow one. I'm looking at a flame time 240 volt 60 watt iron from Bunnings. Has anyone used this or know if it will be okay for wiring guitars? Thank you for your information. Some of those soldering irons are good for amplifiers that use very thick solder and are gluing fairly thick solid wires into place. What can tend to happen is if you're using one of those soldering irons, you can actually burn pots. You can actually burn the equipment that you're the parts that you're actually using. My honest opinion is this: look on the Trading Post, look on Messenger, look on eBay for secondhand decent units. Now, if you're saying going to Bunnings, I assume you're in Australia. If you go to JCar, and there's a brand called Duratec, it cost me about $100, and it comes in three separate sections. You've got the stand for the soldering iron, you've got the soldering iron itself, and you've actually then got a standalone unit which you can use to adjust the heat. I've got two of them, and they are absolutely brilliant. They heat up nice and quickly. They don't get too hot. They're perfect for pedal building, for guitar building. I even use mine to put in the side of the neck dot markers, for Christ's sake. Like they go and go and go, and the tips are replaceable. Yes, it is a bit of money, but by the time you've bought four or five cheap $30 ones, you're better off getting this, because as I said, these I've had for nearly 5 years, and they're showing absolutely no sign of dying. The reason I've got two is I had one here at home, and I had one up at the shop at Katoomba when I had the store at Katoomba. So if that helps, that would be my suggestion. Some of the big bit, don't get anything that's too heavy duty, because as I said, it's basically for homes, for soldering up like the wires in your house, or soldering up amplifiers, big guitar, like Tim Mason from Oak Amplifiers, good mate of mine up here in the Blue Mountains. Like Tim uses those big heavy duty ones, but he's wiring together solid core stuff, and it's like it's overkill on a cigar box guitar. If that helps. So you want something that's going to apply a nice even heat, and use the 3-3-3 rule. So the idea would be you should be able to put the soldering iron on the unit that you're going to be soldering for 3 seconds, put the solder on for 3 seconds, leave the soldering iron on for 3 seconds, and then leave it. So that's the 3-3-3 rule. And it if you can follow that, it'll your soldering will work every single time. Now all we need is to have a third hand so that we can actually hold everything in place while we do it. And the last question comes from Hal Broland, and he says, I'm getting ready for my first craft show booth with my guitars this summer. How do you guys display and market your guitar? So I assume he's in the Northern Hemisphere because we're moving into winter now. And yeah, man, that's something I'm looking to get back into as well, getting back into doing markets and festivals and things like that. You are going to have an absolute ball. Couple of things to suggest for you would be, first of all, have a look at your product that you're selling. Have a range of different products. Like, have some stuff that you can sell, you know, at a comfortable price. And don't be afraid to upsell. Don't be afraid to, if someone comes in, they're looking at one of the cheaper guitars, you can always upsell, offer another one of your more expensive guitars, especially if they're looking for, you know, for magnetic pickups or volume and tone or frets, or have a good look around at what's going on in the marketplace, and mostly price from your heart. Price your time. Charge for your time. That is the most important thing that I can probably say, because so many of us get into doing this and we build guitars, and because we have a lack of self-esteem in ourselves, we criminally undercharge for stuff. You know, at the end of the day, your time is worth a lot. Your time is worth money. You know, if you're spending 5 hours on a guitar, 5 or 6 solid hours of your day on a guitar, have a think about what 5 or 6 hours means. And it's a specialist craft. You have to remember this is a specialist craft. This is not, you know, this is not something that everybody can do. There's a reason why mechanics charge what they charge to fix your car. Because I can't fix my car. The person I'm getting to fix my car has got the training, years of training, the tools, the equipment, the parts, all this stuff, man. So first and foremost, make sure you're getting your money's worth for your time, okay? Sully from Sully's Guitars, who used to do a podcast that I loved back in the day called the Luthierist Podcast, had a rule. And his rule was when he built a guitar, he would charge 4 times the cost of the materials. Now, this is an electric guitar we're talking about. Now, you might find that with cigar box guitar, the parts that you're, you know, the parts that you're using are inexpensive. All right. I had an associate contact me yesterday, and they said, look, I'm interested in, can you build us a few cigar box guitars that we can sell when we do our gigs? We'd like to sell, you know, these cigar box guitars at the gigs. And we're looking, and I was saying, okay, well, something is inexpensive, to something you can kind of make some money on nice and quick. And I'm sitting here thinking, okay, how can I do that? And even, you got to look at it like this, right? Sorry. Prince has been trying to get this, but we can probably hear him snuffling away in the background. There's so much that goes into building even a simple cigar box guitar. If you're going to finish it, even a fretless cigar box guitar, there is time involved. Cutting the wood, shaping the wood, sanding the wood, finishing the guitar. All of these things, and it'll depend on, if you've got magnetic pickups, there's always more work in installing magnetic pickups. There's more wiring. Value your work. That's the first thing I can suggest is make sure you've got a good price and a fair price on your items. Like, don't price yourself out of the marketplace at all, but price yourself fairly and for what you believe your time is worth. Okay, and that's the biggest and most important thing, because the guitar that I'm building at the moment, I did a prototype. The wood has literally cost me $10. Literally has cost me $10. I have a $20 pickup and volume, tone, and output jack assembly. I have, and I'll be using a probably $10 set of tuners. So it doesn't sound like a lot, does it? But I built the box. I built the neck. And this is going to be a fretless guitar. I'm burning in, carefully burning in the fret positions and the dots. And I've stained it. And there's waiting time now. And there's gluing time. And then there's going to be 4 coats of linseed oil applied to the guitar neck. Now, if I sold that for $100, I am not going to get my money back on my time. I will guarantee it. Okay? So this is going to be at least a $280 guitar. At least. And why? Because it's based upon my time. It's based upon my experience actually building these. And I know what I'm doing. So that's what I'm charging for. Okay? So make sure you take care of yourself. Make sure that you walk away from that show with enough money to go and do another show and to be able to fix up your workshop, buy the things for your family that you need. Treat it like a business, guys. Treat it like a business. That is just such an important thing for me to say. Get a 3x3 tent. Make sure you've got weights. Make sure it's a fairly good quality and fairly robust. You can get sides, zip up sides. I did, especially if you're going to be there overnight, you want to zip it up and make it secure. Make sure that you have got some sort of point of sale system there, whether it's on your phone or whether it's a handheld device. Make sure that you can take, money. Make sure that if you are going to accept cash that you take a float. Make sure that you have a zip-up bag. If you've got a bum bag that you can sit right on your right under your tummy, that's right there. Use a zip-up bum bag. It looks as dorky as hell, but let me tell you, it'll keep your money safe. Okay, so that would be my suggestion. Make sure that you have enough food. Make sure that you have a nice little amplifier that you can play. Don't play too loudly. Don't piss off the people next to you. Get along with your friends. Make friends, with the people there, because you'll find if you're doing a stall, you're doing a festival, you're going to be looking after each other's tents at some point in time. So, if you need to run to the bathroom, try and do it with a buddy if you can, or with a family member. It just really relieves you if you need to go and relieve yourself. I hope that has helped, guys. Again, I hope Darren feels a lot better. Thanks again to CB Giddy for sponsoring this show and the YouTube channel. Please go over and check out the YouTube channel. We've got nearly 6,000 group members. We're really trying to build the YouTube channel. So if you've watched this and listened to me yammering on for the last hour, please go over and subscribe to the Cigar Box Guitar Builder YouTube channel. It's a huge help. And take it easy, guys. Remember, go and use the affiliate link down in the description to order your parts from CB Giddy and get 10% off using the promo code Birdwood. And as I said, a little bit of that comes back to help the show. All right, guys, all the best. Have a great week building. Hopefully we'll have an interview for you next week, and I really hope the poor old Darren feels a bit better. All right, all the best, guys. Bye.